Hello, welcome to Prime Lenses. I'm Ian. Each week, I speak with a guest about three lenses that have meant something to them on their photographic journey. And this week, my guest is Amelia LeBrun. Amelia is a UK-based photographer who shoots a mix of digital and film, but a lot of film. And as you'll hear, she's travelled all over the world, including places as far-flung as the Highlands of Scotland. She's shot for brands, shot for herself. Her website is filled with phenomenal imagery, loads of great golden hour and amazing product shots and just contextual travel lifestyle photography that I really, really like. She also just happens to have fantastic taste in camper vans and small dogs. So without further ado, here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy. I'm really excited to talk to you because I love your photography. I love your colours and the way you see the world. And through doing a bit of preparation and research for this conversation, I think there's definitely an Amelia photo, you know, that like you can look at and sort of you've got a bit of a style. So
thank you. Yeah. Very cool.
Good. So how are you this fine day? I feel like we're using up our summer earlier this year. Is it lovely where you are?
Today it's really actually grey and overcast and it's like 11 degrees, but yesterday it was, and like a few days before, it was a good like 19, 20-ish. So it's been really, really nice.
Oh, yeah, lovely. Yeah, it's been lovely up here as well.
Yeah. You're in Scotland, aren't you?
I am. I am in the Highlands, and it's been glorious. No, it's amazing. I was going to ask, actually, because some of your commercial stuff looks like it was very Highland, and I wondered if it was around here.
I have shot quite a lot in the Highlands, yeah. I spent a couple of years living just outside, well, about an hour outside Glasgow. Laneway.
So
I absolutely love Scotland. I always go up there as much as I can, and it's a great place to shoot commercial stuff. It's so big and so wild, but it's not too far away.
Yes,
for the big projects. Yeah, no, yeah. It's, I love it.
I went to university in Glasgow, so I've got I know roughly where you are. And my wife's family come from that place in Trainspotting where they got off the train and it's the middle of nowhere.
That's
Kinlochranach.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's incredible. Yeah. That's so cool. I love that. Trainspotting's a great film.
Oh,
but I love Scotland.
Yeah, it's great up here. And it's nice with a camera because everywhere you turn, there's something, whether it's like the big, like you said, the big open wide landscapes or, you know, the lovely detail and trees. The nice thing where we are, there's tons of trees. So there's a lot of light and shade to play with. And
I'm so jealous.
It's coming back. You'll have to come up.
Back up this sort of probably late summer realistically, because I'll be away for most of the summer, but I always try and get up at least once a year in the van, especially when the weather's like that.
But yeah, you've got like a lovely yellow V-dub camper, haven't you? Is it yellow or is it orange?
I think it's yellow. A lot of people think it's orange. But I would say it's like a kind of deep yellow. She's actually just got her back from the garage now, so she's sitting in the driveway. So I just had a ledger battery installed. So I don't have to rely on solar anymore.
Cool.
And new exhaust and a bit of welding. But she's looking quite smart now. It's nice to have her back in the drive.
They're brilliant things. I'd love a little camper. Yeah, very cool.
They're amazing. Yeah, absolutely love her. She's brilliant. And she's so reliable. There's a big sort of thing that our VW campers always break down. But I've had her about four or five years. And she's broken down probably three or four times in that time. And they've all been pretty minor fixes. Just pipes coming loose or something needing screwing back in. So she's pretty reliable. And I've given up to Northern Norway in her a week up to the Lofoten Islands last year. She was absolutely grand. Well, the starter motor got a bit stuck, so I had to hitch it with a bit of wood every now and again while someone else, I'd have to like flag down random people to jump in the van and start the engine while I was underneath her, like hitting her starter motor with a bit of wood. but it was really fun. And a lot of people were very excited to help. And I met lots of people that way.
I think that's a thing about like more older machines as well, is that you can do that. I can't remember where I got this from, but it was years ago. I'll tell you what it's from. It's from a book called Shopcraft as Soulcraft. And it's a guy, it's really good. He worked in like think tanks and out of university and did loads of stuff in the US and eventually just got sick of it all and went and fixed motorcycles for a living.
Wow. That's so cool.
It's great, right? And being presented with a puzzle was what he enjoyed, right? So someone would bring him a motorcycle, and there's a great bit where someone says, you know, it was working fine when I last parked it up. And he's like, well, with the best wheel in the world, why did you park it up? Like, there must have been something. So he treats every one of the motorcycles he gets to repair like an episode of House. And he's looking at it and working out kind of like,
I love that.
Yeah, how it works and why. And he said that the problem with like modern engines was you open the bonnet of a car and there's another bonnet underneath, which is just this cover over the engine that is very much telling you, these are the bits you are allowed to interact with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Don't touch these bits because they're covered. And like a lot of them are like computers, and engines and computers are obviously completely different. Mine's very much plug and play. Like you say, it's a puzzle. This is, if it's air coming into the engine, there's obviously a pipe that's come loose. It's allowing air to come into the engine. So yeah, it's, I try and every time I break down, I get it sorted. I try and write down what the problem was. So I know if it comes again,
yeah,
I've got a little list of easy fixes, like my starter motor.
Yeah, but now you know, right? You know you can.
Exactly.
Yeah. We had a car breakdown on Sky last year and we were just stuck. And I had to pay £600 to get the car back home and £200 in train tickets. And that's just a peculiar way to end up living, you know? You're like, but this car, you know, just wouldn't do it. And I was like, right, great, we're stuck. And, you know, I don't know tons about cars, but there was no chance, you know? More modern vehicle. No, it sucks.
Yeah, that's a thing, just fully stuck.
Yeah. Is that kind of, does that lend, like one does not accidentally drive a vintage camper and you seem to shoot a lot of film as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of something that just appeals to you, like that more direct, tactile, mechanical approach?
I think it probably is. And it's also, I'm very much, I can't remember what the term is, but it's like a yearning for a time you've never lived in. I feel very connected to like the 70s, 80s and 90s, especially on the West Coast of America, where there is this sort of hippie movement and a lot of VW campers. And I've wanted a VW camper since I was about 14, I think.
Yeah.
Always a classic. I love classic vehicles. I have a runaround car, which is, you know, practical stuff. Mm. But I drive the van as much as I possibly can. And I've always had this connection to sort of vintage and retro vehicles, cameras, style, architecture, everything. I love that sort of mid-century 70s, 80s sort of feel. Yeah,
it's really nice.
So it also ties in with film, and I like my photos to feel as timeless as possible, which I think the film really does lend itself to. Of course, you can edit like film digitally, but there's nothing quite like film, I think.
And when you're shooting your stuff commercially, do you have like your, is part of your look a go-to stock, or do you treat films like brushes, and you know, you've got a texture for this and a texture, and you like to combine things? Mm. Some people in film especially, very like, I'm Tri-X, ride or die.
Yes, I'm Kodak, ride or die. Right. I dabbled in Fuji for a bit, but the color, I just didn't like the colors enough.
Yeah.
So it's across Portra Gold or Ultramax are my, like, they're my films. Yeah. I've got my film, my fridge is full of film, and I still keep buying more, even though my fridge is absolutely rammed with it. I don't shoot black and white because I can make a color photo black and white. I can't make a black and white photo color. I like to have the ability to have the colors if I want them. Mm. Which is funny because I used to only shoot black and white. I used to absolutely hate color film.
Yeah.
Black and white was all I did for a few years. And then I sort of like just switched. And I'm now completely the other way around. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I'll make a recommendation. I don't know if you've read the book, Joel Meyerowitz's book, A Question of Color.
Oh, no, I haven't. Thank you. This is great.
This is a Prime Lenses classic. I mention it too often, but I like, you know, every episode can be someone's first. So the thing about this Joel Meyerowitz book, I read it on a flight and it's quite short. And basically what he did was I think it was the 60s and 70s, he was kind of deciding between black and white and colour. And so what he did was he got two bodies and then he just shot either the same image or almost the same image side by side, one in black and white and one in colour, so he could then look at it and kind of, for himself, I think, make a kind of definitive choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing read because I've had listeners contact me afterwards saying that like they've landed on one side or the other. I landed on colour.
Okay.
I used to like shooting a lot of black and white, and I read this book and it broke my brain. And then there was the best part of a year where I just couldn't shoot black and white anymore. Like,
that's
it just
fascinating.
Yeah, it broke my head. Like a bit like what you're saying, where colour gives you the latitude and the option. There's a line in the book where he goes, "How can you represent the scene fully without the colour that was present. And I thought that was a really interesting way of looking at it. And so that kind of broke my brain, and then I just shot colour for months. I've just recently started dabbling again because it's kind of fun. But it,
yes.
it definitely had an effect. So yeah, seek it out. It's a good read.
I definitely will. Yeah, I've written that down. And stars next to it to make sure I really do. Like, I love black and white. Also with the cost of film.
Yeah.
I only ever really want to shoot what I really want. Mm. Of course, with black and white, you can develop at home, which is saves you a lot of money with scans.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's two sides to every coin, but yeah, no, color is ride or die at the minute.
Yeah, yeah. And do brands and companies you work with, do they have feelings about you shooting a lot of film, or do they just not bother you? They're sort of buying your time based on your portfolio.
I think it really depends on the job. I shot a with Peugeot and Condé Nast Traveler. I shot a collab with them, and a lot of that was shot on film, and they were very keen for me to shoot that on film. Which was amazing. So I got to buy loads of like Portra 800, you know, that really expensive film stock, and put that on expenses, which is always nice. But yeah, a lot of brands I think do like me shooting film. So I usually, if I'm doing a brand job, I tend to shoot a combination. Because again, with film, camera could malfunction, the film could get lost in the post. So it's good just to have both of them. But yeah, it is really nice when brands allow me to shoot film and be a bit more experimental and yeah, like explore that. Yeah, it's really lovely.
I imagine, to me, it's terrifying because a bit like you have the nostalgia for it. I came up through digital in such a way that, like, I don't. So I have a real passionate love for Polaroid, which is why I was repacking my bag last night to try and figure out. I'm meeting some film people at the weekend, and I was trying to figure out how I can take my Polaroid with me, basically. Yes. It's like, how can I fit my boxy Polaroid i2 into a bag which will fit on the plane and meet the requirements of the trouble. Assuming I remember to get it out of the bag for x-rays as well, and I don't nuke the film going through an x-ray, which was the other thing I was going to ask you about, because you're doing a lot of travel stuff, Condé Nast, and it looks like Leica stuff. It looks like that was shot maybe in Greece or somewhere like that, or Italy.
Italy. It's that lovely sort of Euro summer nostalgic sort of vibe, which I think Italy does so well. Traveling with film is actually a lot of the scanners in the UK at the minute, as long as it's under like 3200 speed, you can send it through. I still ask for hand checks where possible, and if that's not possible, I still have a lead line bag which I put it all through. But the scanners in the States are much more powerful, and they're much more used to hand checking film. So if I'm in the States, I always ask them to hand check, which is great, and they're always really good with that.
I've only ever had bad experiences putting it through an x-ray machine. Like, people always say it's going to be fine, and it's never fine. And I've done it a couple of times, and you shouldn't. Like, I just nukes it. It does terrible things to it. I'll send you a picture afterwards of, like, I've scanned it. The great thing about instant film, though, once it's processed or once it's developed, it's safe. Like, you can so it's only on the way, if you do it right, it's only on the way out.
And I kind of feel like instant film is, like, it's got much less protection. With 35mm film, obviously got a metal canister around it, and it's wound up. So you might get a little bit of haze if you're unlucky, but for the most part, it's protected. But I think with instant film, it's literally flat. It's got no metal protection. So I can see that, yeah, it would get absolutely nuked.
Yeah, makes your pictures very pink and very grainy. You can lean into the pink, and because it basically, I don't know, someone listening will be shouting at their iPod at this point, but assuming they're listening on an iPod, but I think it's you can lean into the color. It's almost like it partially exposes it inside. It's an odd effect that it has on the chemistry. Or not the chemistry. Presumably the chemicals are fine. It's the kind of the sensitive part of the film inside. But yeah, it does just go pink. Really weird. The Polaroid Go seemed to be affected more. I don't know whether it was like small surface area or something, I don't know, science. But yeah, it was in those big hulking x-ray machines as well. Thankfully, yeah, shout out to Inverness Airport. They are lovely.
They
let me hand check stuff. They're nice. But it's a tiny airport, so.
It's so lovely that when they don't, they're like, no, it can go through. It's like, no, I promise you it can't. And they're like, no, it can. It's like, we really can't. You have to really have a nice security person who takes pity on you, I think.
As opposed to Heathrow, where they're like, they give precisely, it's sub-zero shit.
Sub-zero,
like, nope,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't care.
Just no.
Yeah, get it through. Like, no. Yeah. Just crying.
Yeah. Buy a little Polaroid Go. I have thought in the past about maybe just not taking film with me and buying it at the airport, but it's so much more expensive to do that. you just...
Yeah, I know this is really boring. With Boots, you can buy online and have it delivered to the airport. So I think you still get the online prices. You don't get the airport prices.
Can
I
you?
Think. Yeah, yeah. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, sorry, my dog's looking at the paws. I'm going to throw something at her.
Oh.
She's locked in. Yeah, and then, yeah, sorry. I could just hear it.
No, it's good.
It's really winding me up.
Yeah. I have two small boys, and sitting near them when they're eating is...
a challenge.
I just hate it, man. I cannot...
The sound is like...
I cannot be near them. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Alice makes fun of me.
It's just grating. Yeah. I can hear her chewing them, and it's just... really, really specific noise. Not even that loud. It's just scratching my brain.
Yes. A big part of these conversations is therapy. So if we can help, and just like, it's just nice to be able to say it out loud. Because when you're on the road, if you're on the road in a camper van with hounds, you're never going to be alone for too long. Because that's going to stand out. People are always going to be interested in either the van or the dogs or all of it. And if you've got a camera in your hand, how do you balance like projects for you that kind of keep your kind of interest up and you kind of like trying new stuff out with the commercial work? Do you get to be quite brave on the commercial work and kind of do it that way, or do you build time in for yourself to kind of do that?
Actually, my biggest problem is not building time for myself. I think I've been struggling really badly over the past few months with like creative burnout, because I'm just not doing it for myself. I'm constantly trying to monetize everything I do, which means I never actually do anything for me, never any passion projects, which is really difficult. And I'm trying to get better at it, but it seems to be like an ongoing battle. And I just think my commercial work will suffer if I don't give myself enough time for my passion project to really find what I want to shoot and what brings me joy, not just what brings me money. I'm just, if I can make money out of it, I'm minded to always make money out of it, rather than just think, actually, no, this is a really nice trip just to do for you. So I'm going to go away for my birthday, and I'm already thinking, how can I monetize it? Stop. You don't need it. It's your birthday. Just chill for like a few days. So I'm trying very hard just to go away and not monetize it, and just shoot because I want to shoot without any pressure. I just find it so hard. So yeah, it's a real ongoing battle at the minute. And yeah. I'm still trying to find my way around it, and because I am so burnt out, I'm struggling to find any joy even in passion projects.
Did you have friends and family be supportive when you said, look, I'm gonna be a photographer, and when you started out?
I was very lucky. My mum is really creative, my grandma's really creative, and I'm the middle child out of four, so I think they kind of just like, let me do whatever I wanted. They've got like the oldest boy, the oldest girl,
right,
and then the baby. And so I'm the third girl. So I think I sort of got like a bit of a free pass. My brother wanted to do something creative. My dad was like, no, like, we don't, back in, he's a colonel in the army. So he's very like militant, literally. So I think my poor brother was like an experiment. He was like the first child. So he's like, no, you're not allowed to do that. But I think by the time they got to me, everything was a bit more relaxed, and they already had two very academic older children. So I got to like, just have a turn doing what I wanted, basically. Yeah.
Got the heirs. You can be a spare. That's okay.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very relaxed. I could literally just like, I wanted to be a nurse originally at school, but I wasn't getting the grades and I wasn't enjoying it. So when I decided I wanted to be a photographer, my parents were very supportive. And they're just sort of like, you can do it. If you can make money out of it, do it. Yeah. And I do manage to. So yeah. So it's good.
When I talk to a bunch of people, sometimes they have like the camera that's for them versus the one they use for their work. You often see it. I've seen it at guy I had on, Rob, who was a MotoGP photographer actually early on. Mm-hmm. He shoots Canon for his work, and they're obviously like big high performance Canon rigs and big primes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I saw him at a camera show in London, and there was his Leica slung around his neck because that's the one for him, right? So that's, just interesting.
Yeah, on camera.
I wondered whether you have, because you mentioned when we were talking back and forth that you don't have a ton of lenses that you use. You kind of stick with one. Do you have a different camera or something that you can pick up that's more for you? Or is it just always the same camera and that's what you know and that's how you see the world?
I think I probably do shoot with my Leica Q2 more. So I'm doing a city break and I haven't got any. I've done like four of them. I haven't got any work on. I'll generally just take my Leica. It's lightweight. I can throw it in a crossbody bag. I don't have to have a big heavy. And I always have my contacts T2 on me as well, which is like a point and shoot, a high power point and shoot. So those two are like my fun cameras. And then I have a Leica M6 and my Canon setup, which I use for work.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's sort of a bit of a cross. I use Leica for fun and work, but my Q2 tends to be my sort of just tootling around, going on holiday, going to see my partner in Saudi.
Yeah.
Tend to go
in.
Just take the Q2 for that, which is really nice.
Yeah. I'd love a Q2 or a Q in general, because that lens, that 28mm lens is, well, it's close to 24. It's insane.
Yes. It is a lovely lens. I really want to get my hands on the Q3 4.3, because for me, the 28 is a little bit wide.
Yeah.
I like a slightly more non-wide lens. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would like to have a go with the Q3 4.3 and see what that 43mm lens is like, because I think it would be really, really nice.
Yeah. It's an Apo as well. They've started the Q. It's kind of like buying a lens and getting a free camera on the back of it.
That's exactly how it feels like. Yeah, you're paying for that really lovely glass, and then the bonus is a very small, well, relatively small, portable camera as well. Yeah, but it's great for just slinging around me if I'm not going out to take photos specifically, but I want to have something on me that isn't my iPhone that I can then use those photos commercially if I wanted to. The quality's there. Yeah.
Do you punch in with it much? Because I find I've got an M11, and so I will shoot, generally I'll shoot at 36, but it can go up to, like if I only have one lens with me, I quite, 35 is my focal length. So I run around with my 35 Zeiss, and I love that lens, it's tremendous. Mm-hmm. And you can get away with quite a lot cropping in with that high res sensor thing, which I think is kind of, I'm testing a 24 megapixel camera for a review at the moment. It's Pixie. You know have you heard of the Pixie? Little Pixie?
No, I haven't.
This is a rangefinder style camera made by actually a friend of mine, a guy I used to work with, David. So they're making them in France. And it's a 24 megapixel full frame. It doesn't have a screen on the back. It's an M mount compatible camera.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, internal storage. So a little bit like that BF Sigma that Sigma have just done. Interchangeable lenses, internal storage, USB-C, things. So they've sent me one to have a little bit of a play with. So I'm trying that out. But I'm a one camera person, so it's my M for everything. And so having that resolution and being able to punch in is kind of a sort of intriguing thing. And I wonder whether that's the next thing that's kind of going to happen more and more now, is that Canon seem to be very doggedly sticking to, like, actually 24 megapixels, great. And same with, Fuji. But some of the full frame guys are just getting, there'll be 100 megapixels in something the size of a Q before we know it.
Yeah,
right?
It's crazy. Yeah. And they are really, they're progressing so fast. But yeah, I do like the whole no screen digital. I did, I had a mess around with the M11D for Leica. I did a job with them out in Italy, that Leica job. And the M11D was lovely because it was very much shooting film without that cost of burning through a roll or shoot the same frame four times. But you still don't have that. I'm very good at, the reason I started shooting film a lot more is because I'm about checking the back of the camera. I've got exact photo and not really living in the moment, but like take it and then look at my camera and not actually enjoy what I'm shooting. So the film allows me to be much more present and see something, I like it, take the photo and move, like enjoy it and then move on, rather than like checking the screen and doing it four times, five, seven times more realistically.
I've always fancied that X-Pro, the Fuji, the X-Pro 3 with the little thing on the back that pretends to be a film canister.
I do love that. Yeah, the way you put your little, film ticket. Film box. Yeah.
It's really nice.
I do love that whole, mix of the sort of combination of shooting digital and film style, I think is a very clever thing to do. It's sort of, it's moving backwards, but with forward technology.
Yes.
Sort of like moving back with no screen, don't see what you're shooting, but you've then got the technology with them, huge files and capacity to shoot as much as you want. That £20 a roll of Portra 800 and £15 for there plus postage, and before you know, you're like £40 for 30 frames or something. Two of which are probably good.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. No, you'll shoot roll after roll, and get maybe 5% hit rate is a good roll.
Literally, and I used to shoot loads of disposables. And again, I was like, one per roll was actually half decent. I'd spent far too much on this disposable camera. I've moved away from those because it's just not cost efficient.
No, what were you using those for? Were they for just fun cameras for you, or was it a look on a job,
It was just fun cameras. Just I had one in the front of my van's glove compartment, so I could just snap photos whenever I saw them. But unfortunately, the cost and the quality of photos was not matching up. No,
there's the image in your head. I think that's why I have one camera as a rule, because I don't ever want a situation where I'm out getting a shot and there's a terrible voice in the back of my head, which I should ignore because it's wrong. But the idea that, oh, I'm using the wrong tool, it can take you out of the moment and take you out of actually enjoying capturing the photo that you're capturing. If I'm sitting there with a Q and a 28 mil wide lens and thinking this would be better at 50 or 35.
Which is precisely why I sold all of my lenses bar one.
Right.
Because I was constantly thinking, I wish I had it, or taking time to change the lens and missing the shot because you thought it might be better on a different lens. And again, that whole thing of like, this would be better on a different lens. But if I don't have a different lens, I don't have that thought in my head. Like you with one camera.
Mm.
And it's just, because I used to have three lenses that I used all the time. But again, it was that constant thing of, I'll change the lens. And I'm hiking out for, you know, a multi-day hike and you've got like three lenses, four cameras.
Yep.
And like, it's just excessive.
And then you use one of them twice and then that's it.
Exactly. Literally one frame on the 7200 and then it goes back in for the rest of the hike and it's like breaking my back.
Yeah. But you know it's there.
I'm constantly thinking like, do I can put my bag down, undo it, change the lens, take the shot. Yeah. And then, it just got to me. It just got to the point where I'm quite indecisive anyway.
Right.
Should have seen me. I'm doing like a freaking spreadsheet where I should go for my birthday, which is actually meant to be a holiday, but I cannot choose. And so if I take as many choices out of my life as I can, life is much easier.
Yeah. No, it's good.
Very fun.
I have wireless headphones and mics in my glasses. So these are the Ray-Bans that can do...
The metal ones.
Yeah. And they're, the camera's great. I had the Snap spectacles. Did you ever see Snap's ones? So I had various versions of Snap spectacles. So these have cameras in.
That's wild.
I'll send you it afterwards. After I'd had them for 5 years, I made a little video and sent it to Snap. I wasn't doing the podcast at the time. I just wanted to say thank you to these people who made the thing. And I just sort of threw it. Never heard anything back from anyone. But I made this little video of a montage of having cameras on my face for 5 years, basically. Because it's incredible.
Very cool.
It's an incredible thing. And then when these came out, these are the second gen ones that are actually really, the camera is actually pretty good. It's computational photography to death. So it's HDR everything, and it's too much. If you wanted to actually use it for something, you would scale it back. But the image quality is not bad. But the thing that really makes them great is they've got little speakers in the arms and a microphone in the bridge. So what it means is I can be on an audio call, like hands-free phone calls, and just walk around doing a hands-free phone call. I can still hear the world around me. And it's like, they are very good for that.
That's very cool. Yeah.
It's really handy.
Especially if you're like walking the dog and you don't want to have AirPods in. If you're walking home at night, you don't want to have your AirPods, but you can still listen to something and know what's going on around you.
Yeah.
That's very clever.
It's really, really good. It's surprisingly good quality. And I've listened back to when I've done audio recordings in the field, like with a microphone and outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
For ambient stuff, it's very convincing. Like, it's very good, the sort of the surround soundiness. Really puts you in a place. It's really impressive.
That's very cool.
Living in the future is wild. But yeah.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Meanwhile, I'm driving a 40-something-year-old van and shooting film.
No, but I think film, I mean, film's been on the way back. Film's been on the way back, it feels like, for like 2 or 3 years at this point. Like, there's been a gradual ramp, and now we're getting some new film stocks and things like that.
It's very cool.
Yeah. Would you let yourself kind of, because I know you've got your favourites, and I should ask you what that one lens is actually in a minute, but do you sort of see yourself experimenting with some of these new stocks to see what they're like? Are you going to be, you know, throw them at your favourite lab and see what happens?
Yeah, my sister got me some Harman Phoenix, a couple of rolls for Christmas. I still haven't tried them because, again, I really wanted them. And then I'm like, oh, what if I don't like them? And I shot a whole roll and those, I don't like those photos because of the film stock. But I mean, to be honest, I edit my film photos anyway because it's like a big debate, do you or don't you? But I mean, you know, you edit them in the darkroom anyway. So I edit them in post. So I'm going to probably throw a roll in when I go on this trip, wherever I go. Honestly, I think I was planning like a 3-year adventure. I'm literally planning a few days away in Europe. So I'm gonna try that and see how I like it. But I've seen example photos and it's very warm and golden, and I do like that kind of hue in my photos. I think what I found with Fuji was it was very green and almost a bit pinky as well. And I just didn't get on with those colours, and I couldn't do much in post because the colours were so opposite to what I do like. So I'm excited to try that when I finally get around to it. But other than that, I'm quite stuck in my ways on film stock. I do like a bit of CineStill as well. I like shooting CineStill in daylight. You get those lovely sort of halogenic flares on the highlights. So that's always really lovely, especially when I'm shooting water. And it gets all those like sunspots get really lovely and like flared, which I do really like.
Mm. Oh, nice. Yeah. It does seem like talking to film people is dangerous, because then I start looking at M5s on eBay and going,
yes,
I've got the lenses. Mm. I mean, I could.
Yeah.
Just in
a body. Yeah, no, it is dangerous.
What is that mystery, the mysterious single lens? I'm curious as to what focal length you chose, as if I'm going to only have one, you know, especially on a rangefinder.
Yes. Oh, so the rangefinder, I've only got my 35mm Summicron 1.8, I think it is, on my M6. And then for my digital only lens I have on digital now, because I've sold the rest of them, is 24-70 2.8 Canon R. This is Canon R. Yeah. I upgraded from 5D Mark III for most of my career. And then I wanted to be able to do stuff like have a shutter remote on my phone for when I'm just shooting on my own, which the Mark III just didn't do. So I was looking at upgrading, and there's all these R5 and R6, and I just thought, I don't need all of that. I don't do videos, really. I do them on my phone, but not on camera. And I think again, in the modern world, one is always encouraged to get the latest of everything and have all of the varieties. And I could have bought the R5 or R6, but I thought, I'd rather save that money and go on a trip, just with an R. And it saved me a decent chunk of money, and I love the R. I don't think I need anything in terms of the camera more than that. And as for the lens, I got the, I think it's RF mount. So I bought it in the States when I was out there last year. Bought it off Facebook Marketplace. Again, I always buy my gear secondhand. I've never had, only ever had a new camera once, which is my Q2. I'm very much into secondhand everything. It's in good condition. I don't see the point in paying for the packaging, because just throw it away. And I'd much rather spend more money on a film camera and film stock than like a brand new camera from Canon. So it's 24-70 RF mount, 2.8. That's all I ever shoot with now. Yeah. And before that, my arsenal was 7200, 2.8, and a Sigma 35mm 1.4, I think, art lens, which is a beautiful lens. I just realized I wasn't using them. So I just cleared them out, and they just literally collecting dust, because I don't clean or dust enough. They were literally collecting dust on my sideboard. So I thought, well, no point in having them here, but one day I might get one frame out of it. My one lens is the 24-70.
I like this. Obviously, you know, being a human being, you like having your perspective reinforced, and the idea of like not just one camera in. Amateurs only have one camera, my friend. One lens. That's what you need.
One lens.
That's what you need to go to is one lens. Yeah.
I have one lens, 35mm. It's all I shoot on the M6.
Yeah. That's a cracker of a lens as well.
It's great. I've got a Voigtlander. It's a pancake one. Mm. So it's really nice to strip it in my pocket. But I've also got a Summicron 35mm, which is literally sitting in the box, brand new. Mm. I've never taken it out.
Right.
Because I really like the pancake lens.
It's the same reason I use my 35. So I have the Zeiss C, the Biogon C, which is a 2.8.
Absolutely.
And... Mm-hmm. 2.8 is plenty fast enough, especially on a modern digital body where you can crank the ISO really high and kind of get away with it, to be honest. Yeah. The only time, I mean, the noise reduction stuff now is wild. I was posting pictures last couple of days of, I bought a 560 and 400mm R mount lens. I say lens,
nice.
It's kind of basically just a long tube with a couple of bits of glass at the end of it. Like that's
Okay.
It's from the 80s. It's a NovaFlex.
Very cool.
And so it's an R mount adapted to M. So it's this gigantic, I'll send you a picture afterwards. It's hilarious.
Yeah,
it's
please
a gigantic
do.
Lens that you focus by pulling a trigger like a gun. Like it's really,
oh wow.
And so it's this analog thing where you're kind of like just adjusting it. It's really cool. And it can take these fantastic photos. I've got some really nice shots of birds and stuff in the garden, but because you're shooting everything, even in bright light, you're shooting everything at like f11, f16 to get any, and you still get lovely separation because you're so far away from the thing. get great compression, but it's a wild thing to use. But with the right kind of tweaking and cleaning, and also because it's 40 years old, it's a bit dirty. It's not been cared for super well, which is why it was as cheap as it was. That's why I bought it, right? Like it was just before Christmas. It was like, I think London, one of the London camera specialists, and they knocked £800 off it. And so it was like, you know,
wow.
I was like, well, this thing's £300. And
you kind of have to at that point.
Yeah. My stepdad sent it to me, and I was just like, oh, I think I have to pull the trigger on that. That's insane.
Literally.
But you get, as it turns out. But I got these great shots of the woodpecker in the garden in the snow and stuff. And so you're sort of like, well, this is worth it for this one exactly. scenario. But you do need to have it really on a tripod and kind of set up and just, you know.
Yeah.
It's effort.
Yeah.
But it's worth.
Yes.
It's worth
it. It's worth it for those shots. Yeah, absolutely. It's like I meant to have a medium format as well, and that is heavy and it's effort. But then when I get the scans back, I'm like, it was worth hauling that around.
Yeah, which medium format camera?
RB67.
Right. Okay.
So I used to have a Pentax 67 with the lovely wooden handle and everything, but the battery died on me too many times where I couldn't get batteries. Like in the middle of the Namibian desert, I was really excited. I got it set up, and then the battery gone, and I didn't have any spares with me. So that was a complete waste of like lugging this huge weight around. But the RB, I think it's the RB. It's the RB. It's completely battery free. There's no light meter. There's nothing that can go wrong in terms of batteries. It's mechanical. So I bought that over the RZ. The RZ, better quality, better lenses, but battery. And I was like, no, I'm getting fear of ever having to use a battery in a film camera again. Apart from I am, but yeah. So now if I lug that around, I know I can get the shot.
Does the M6 still works without the battery as well, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Just the light meter doesn't work. And I've got one on my phone, which does a good enough job. So, yeah.
I think you also find you've got eyes at a certain point. Like, at a certain point, you just know, like...
I can work this out.
Yeah, you're like, I'm probably going to be okay. And again, I say that as a tourist who's shooting digital, so I can just peek at the back if I need to. But by and large...
yeah. You know. Yeah, most of the time I can tell where I need to be. And that's the thing, if you get high quality scans, you can do a lot with them if something does go wrong. You know, you're underexposed or overexposed. To a certain extent, you can get them back.
Yeah, nice big tiffs. You'll be all right.
Exactly, yeah. Again, ridiculously expensive, but so nice when you get them into Lightroom.
Do you have a couple of tame houses that you use for kind of developing your film? Or do you kind of like have one, like, this is Bob. He does the work for me, I know.
Yeah, I have one. I've gone through 3 or 4 film labs. And I've settled on one. It's Kid Easy Lab in Leeds. They are the one. I've tried so many others. And I started one when they were quite young. And as they got bigger, the quality just went. I think they just got too busy. But there's only a couple of them there. They're in the beginning, lovely scans, really pleased with them. But then the busier they got, the less I like the scans. So I moved over to Take It Easy. And every time, they're perfect. Maybe a slight colour adjustment for my taste or how I remember it. But for the most part. 99% of the time, they're absolutely perfect. I love them.
Yeah. Tiffany Roubert, who was previous guest of the show, she...
yes.
Yeah, she uses them.
Yes.
Loves them to bits.
I love her work. Yeah, I think it's perfect, yeah. But yeah, her work is beautiful.
She did some stuff that came out. It was on Ilford's blog this week, shooting with one of their new stocks. She did. It's a very Tiffany shoot with a model in a hotel kind of setting, because that's kind of like her vibe.
Yes.
Amazing shots of this woman with shaved hair, and just incredible pictures, like really, really good. I'm seeing her at the weekend, hopefully, at London Photo. So there's a Silver Grain, the magazine Silver Grain, are organising a photo walk. And I want to talk to them because they're doing the Widelux revival project to try and make those cameras again. So
that would be very cool.
Oh, if they start making Wideluxes again, that'd be amazing.
I do love the whole sort of reincarnation of film and it not just being like it being more mainstream, which means more money, which means more eyes, which means better quality, more film stocks, more of everything. That would be very cool though. I do love the reincarnation of film and it being, I think when you have the choice to shoot either, I don't know how to explain it. I don't know how to explain it. So I'm going to release that there before I just ramble on for a good 10 minutes and you're like, what?
No, look, people are here for the rambling. Never fear rambling.
For the ramble. Okay, that's lucky.
But Polaroid, like, it's the same thing. Like, when a Polaroid hits, there's this kind of, like, exquisite pain with instant film where it's so sensitive to temperature and light and da-da. But when it hits, oh, dang.
Like, God, it's
so satisfying to have got that just bang on. And then you're like, right, now I have to keep this safe and keep it out of the sun and scan it.
Exactly, until I can, until it can get scanned and digitized, immortalized. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that, I didn't know that London Photo was on this weekend. I'm actually not doing anything. What day is it on? Is it on across the weekend? Or is
it's on right now. So as people listening to this, by the time it comes out, they will have missed it. But it's on, been on since Wednesday, and it's on through till Sunday. And there's loads of talks on and things like that. So I'm going down Saturday morning because where we are in the Highlands, I can get a really early flight. I can be in London before 9 and then go to the show, wander about, I'll catch up with some friends, I'll see the Silver Grain people later on, hopefully set up some conversations for the future show and stuff like that.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah.
But I've recently resigned from my day job so that I can do more podcast stuff. So So it's quite good timing to go down there to a show like this and start talking to people about future plans, because I've done, get to do collaborations and stuff, and this is how you've probably had this with work as well. Like, you meet people, spend some time talking, and that you have to line this stuff up a long time out.
Exactly.
And then there'll be a reason to talk to one another, and then, off you go.
Yeah, I think that's making connections and not assuming everything's going to happen immediately is the way to do it. Make connections for the sake of making them, not for what could happen. Because if you do it for making connections for the sake of it, much more likely for it to happen than trying to make it happen. I always think that,
Yeah, for you, it sounds like that. If you didn't think that way, it would result in a spreadsheet. And then you'd be in trouble. And you're like,
exactly. I need to stop. Honestly, I've got lists and spreadsheets. And it's awful. I can't even make a decision.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, you should totally go. If you can get there, it's worth going.
I think it would. I'm really close to London. I can take a quick train. But it's 2 hours in, so it's not a big deal.
Oh, amazing.
Hour and a half-ish. So that might be a good plan.
I'm expecting to be fully exhausted on Saturday night because I'll get up at 5. Head to the airport. Oh. A day on my feet.
That is brutal. Yeah. It is. Meeting people as well.
It is brutal. Although I'm staying in a hotel that I'm really like, where they have pictures of French bulldogs and things like that in the rooms on big walls and stuff. So it's not,
incredible. It's not all bad.
No, exactly.
You're going to get to see photos of French bulldogs. What's not to love?
Exactly. I was curious, actually, when I was looking through your work with all your travel and stuff like that, do you get to kind of come up with a lot of the concepts and like have a lot of creative freedom in your jobs? Because you're one of the photographers, sometimes when I talk to photographers, there's a real difference between their commercial work and the stuff that's for them. But with you, there was a lovely kind of overlap there.
Yes.
Is that what people are buying? And is that what you push? Would you take something on if they asked you to kind of deviate too wildly from that? Would you be comfortable going, I just don't think that's me?
Yeah, I haven't had many jobs where they wanted me to deviate, which is really nice. And as my partner, girlfriend always says to me, they're hiring you for your style. Even if they want you to do a different subject, they still want you for the way you shoot and the way you see. Like you say, my commercial work and my personal work is very similar. I'm lucky enough to only ever really shoot what I like to shoot. When people hire me, they do hire me for the way I shoot. I think regardless of what the subject is or where I'm going, the way I see, like you said earlier, and the way I take photos just translates to a multitude of subjects. I think it's probably a combination. People hire me for the way I shoot, but I'm always happy to take on a different challenge. It's nice to be challenged, I think. And I don't really shoot cars, and then I got this job for Peugeot, but it was so much more about just the car. It was about experience and where you go in the car and sort of where you eat, what you see, the road. And so I think it was I think when people hire me, they hire me for my style. And that's what I'm always trying to remember as well. Yeah. They're not going to hire me because they don't like my style. If they hire me, they like me. So have a bit more confidence and just embrace that.
Peugeot stuff was really nice because when I was looking at that, I thought, A, you wouldn't know that you weren't practiced at taking photos of cars. They're excellent photos of a car. You can see that it's the car and it's in the landscape and all the rest of it. But I think they had a little bit of personality and warmth to them. You had people, you weren't afraid to put people in the shots as well as the vehicle. Yeah. And it wasn't like every shot has to have the vehicle perfectly placed in the center. Yes. You could play with here's the details of the back of it and here's the thing and stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a friend who does beautiful car work. He shoots very clean, very, very sort of car focused, and his work is stunning. But I think that's not me. So I try and shoot sort of more, basically, if I could tell a story in my photo, I'm happy. So I try and shoot more about just the car. You can go and see a car, but it's about where the car can take you and what you can gain from having this car and where you can go and the things you can see with this car. Yeah, but thank you. Yeah, I don't tend to shoot too cleanly and too minimally generally. So it's quite nice when I can shoot on film or shoot raindrops in the back of a car, or, you know, not just shooting clean lines, but shooting the environment around the car.
I years ago worked with someone who had done a lot of, like, they worked for Mamas and Papas in, like, research into, mm-hmm. like making physical products, right? And they looked at other product manufacturers. And it was interesting. There's a great presentation that I think is on the web around the world if people are interested. But it was research that Ford did into their trucks to work out what they needed to provide customers with. And what they realized was the cab was oftentimes someone's office. So what they needed to do was not add stuff that a person didn't, because actually what you would immediately find getting into the vehicle with someone was, right, look, here's all my, I have my book open, like my diary open with where I'm going to next, and so it led them to develop stuff that actually helped people to work out of the cab of their truck, as opposed to, you know, it's just a truck or whatever. And so similar, so like with the car thing, that's really useful, because I talk a lot recently about creative quantum leap of, like, the thing that you've done influences the next person along and influences the next person along. And sometimes that's the power of photography, is that if people in that brand are seeing images that you've made of the thing in use, that helps them to remember you're making something that's going to be used by someone. Because when you, you know, it's like you being a photographer, like, in the moment, it's really easy to, like, just look at it through purely you as a photographer lens.
Yes.
And not the, you know, we forget, like, when in my day job where I work in games, we sometimes forget about players because we're trying to get the thing made and out the door. And, you know, is it running? Is it performant? Is it bug free? Mm-hmm. You can forget, oh, actually, someone's got to play this.
Yeah, it might be perfect physically, or, you know, in terms of production, it might be perfect, but people don't want to play it. Doesn't matter how perfect it is.
Yeah. Is it fun? I think about it a lot in terms of that that Sigma BF camera, right? Is that it's the form is exquisite. They've done an incredible thing, but it may well be at the expense of how usable the thing is, right? It's got sharp edges. It's hard to hold one-handed. The lenses are all gigantic compared to the body.
You've got this tiny body,
Yeah, and it's just, I was talking to previous guest Hugh Brownstone about it, and he and I agreed that, like, on balance, it's probably the second version, if they get to do another one, could be spectacular. Because they'll get the feedback from this first one, and the feedback in general seems to be it's a bit too beautiful a folly, you know, or whatever, beautifully foolish.
Yeah.
And maybe something, you know, like no Wi-Fi connectivity, only being able to get the pictures off with a USB cable, you know, like there's some practical stuff. Like my M11, I've gotten very comfortable. I think they did this because of the M11D. I've gotten very comfortable with just wandering around my M11 and low-res JPEGs just appear on my phone as I'm taking pictures. So I don't have the preview turned on the camera after I take a shot. I just take a shot, get on with my life, and then at some point when I sit down later, I have a look on my phone and just get a quick, how are they looking?
A quick idea of what you've shot.
Yeah, because they're just appearing magically in the background. That is a modern affordance that a modern camera can do that I'm like, that's great. I don't want to go back.
Yeah.
And so not having that, but having everything else, you know, it's like that's kind of a hard thing to give up now.
Yeah, so exactly. And especially for a new camera. I think one can get so obsessed with form and stripping back to functionality that you sort of forget about the user and the user's ergonomics and enjoyability of using a camera. I think it's so easy to get caught up in form and how something looks and how it performs, but forgetting how people will perform with it. Because a camera is very much, it's not a piece of art where you just look at it. It's something you have to use. It has to have that functionality as well as that form, as well as looking nice. It has to be something that people want to use and pick up. You know, if you've got five cameras, you have to want to pick up the Sigma.
Yeah. You've got to know that you're going to get. Otherwise, what's the point, right?
Exactly. If you're not going to get what you want out of it, there's no point in picking it up.
Yeah.
And there's no point in having it.
Yeah.
Which is I think there is that.
Yeah, it's the danger with, like, modern stuff as well, is that everything's getting firmware updates the whole time. And, like, the pictures, I can see it in the pictures my glasses makes, that they're changing over time. Because they were one type of photo about a year ago when I first got them. And I can see it's definitely doing different stuff now. And it's a tiny computer. I've got no control over it. It's all computational photography to death. It determines everything. So similarly, when the i2 came out, that Polaroid, for all of its Polaroidness, again, has had firmware updates. So the light meter is working a lot better now, a lot more reliably than it was. You used to have to underexpose quite a lot to kind of get, if you were going to shoot it auto.
Fascinating, yeah.
But that's gotten a lot better now. So you can kind of like basically fire and forget with it, a bit like an SLR 680 or whatever. So on the one hand, it's good. You can improve these things over time. But on the other hand, it does kind of, it does mean that you can't necessarily, The Verge do this thing where they review what's in the box, not what the promise of future updates is. And it does mean that you're kind of, it's now difficult to kind of recommend a thing, because you also can, you know, it's going to change. And sometimes that change might be bad. And sometimes, you know, they might break something.
Yeah. Exactly. Or the update doesn't, you might have liked the previous update, but if it automatically updates, there's nothing you can do about it. Which again, if you're going back to shooting film, it's very much, you can't update it. It's what you have is what you get. You can refer a film camera to someone knowing that however long you've had it for, it will remain the same, rather than this constant update. Maybe things are changing that you don't like.
Yeah.
For example, the new Apple Photo layout.
Yes.
Whoever did that needs to be fired. It's absolutely horrible. I liked it before.
Yep.
And I think that's a common, the common feeling is, it sucks. Why did you do that? And I think often updates come, again, for form rather than functionality, which I think is why it's, almost nice to stick at old school and just what you get, you know, what you see is what you get, and it won't change.
I think it's the pressure of having to fix something that doesn't need to be fixed. I think that's the problem, isn't it? They've got to have something to talk about every year.
Yes. And it seems like progression is more important than what it causes. It's almost like people are so keen to keep moving forward that they forget that moving forward isn't always better than what used to be. And like you say, having something to talk about and sort of almost trying to verify why they're there, I can't remember the right word, verify why they're there, comes at the cost of people's experience with it. If it ain't broke.
M5s and M6s. Once again, I'm going to end an episode by talking about buying a film camera and then being too coward to pull the trigger on a film camera.
You're going to have to do it at some point. So you can end an episode saying, here is my new film camera.
Yeah. Well, Tiffany has been making fun of me ever since she was on the show, because she's like, have you bought that M5 yet?
Have you got it yet?
Yeah.
I'm going to be the same. I'm going to be in your DMs and like, have you got it yet?
Oh, no.
Because generally your crowd is going to go against you.
Yeah.
They're going to bully you into getting it.
Hey, look, there are worse things to be bullied into getting, right? Like an awesome film camera.
True.
Yeah, from like a weird alternate future. Like the ugly one.
Exactly.
I feel like I'm looking after it as well, because it's the ugly M that nobody likes.
Yeah, that nobody really talks about, doesn't get airtime. I mean, you should really talk yourself into it. I think if you don't go off this call and buy that camera, I'm going to be quite disappointed.
Okay, oh gosh. Oh no, I've let Amelia down.
I know, you fool. You should not have mentioned this. Or you leave space in your bag tomorrow and come back with one from London.
Yes.
Quite nice buying things in the flesh.
Yeah. Oh, that's quite compelling, actually. I'd be in terrible trouble. But it's a question of how long would it take Alice to notice?
Oh, that's the thing. I don't know what cameras I've got any time. So which one is that? I was like, oh. And it's a new one I've just spent too much on. Will she even notice? Probably not. And if she does, her anger will not outlive the joy you have with that camera.
No, it's true. Yeah, actually, I bought a lens not long ago based on a guest recommendation, and Alice really liked the photos it made of her. So I think as long as I can do that, if I can make her look great, then maybe we'll be. Yeah,
you'll probably be safe.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm dry. We did a new M5.
Yeah. If I let you know I've moved house, then you'll know it didn't go very well. I'm living in the garden.
Yeah, something went drastically
wrong. I'm in a tent.
Wrong.
It's fine. I love it.
Yeah, I love it.
That's great. Cool. Oh well. No, thank you for encouraging me, and hopefully being a bad influence. It's really good.
Always. Hopefully, yeah. If it brings you joy, I think, you know, what's the worst that can happen?
Exactly. So, on the subject of joy, let's send some people your way. For people listening who maybe haven't seen your work, where can they go and find more Amelia?
My website or Instagram. Instagram gets more updated more often than my website. So I'm on Instagram at Ams Lebrun, which is, should I spell it out? I feel like people always get my surname wrong. So it's AMSLEBRUN. And my website is amelialebrun.com. Amelia with an A, not an E.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much my two main sites. I do a bit on Threads, but nothing very exciting. So yeah, Instagram and website are the two places to find me. Yeah.
Yeah. As much as I enjoy Threads, I think that is the challenge facing Threads. Like, what I keep seeing posts. I keep seeing posts that still say, "What do we do here? Like, what's this one
yeah,
for?"
Yeah, literally. I kind of just treat it like a fairground. I go on a ride if I want to, and if I walk past,
I think that's the big learning of social media. It's been incredible to be able to kind of find people like you, and to do something like this, it would be impossible without it, really, because being able to get direct contact with people. But at the same time, you have to accept that it's not putting everyone, having like a global town square is not feasible. Yeah. Like, human beings don't work that way. We're not good at it. We've tried it for like 15 years. We can see what happens now.
Yep. It's not going well. Yeah.
No. Just small communities, groups of interest, that kind of thing, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was amazing. Thank you so much for having a chat. I've really enjoyed this, and it may end up in me buying a film camera, but that's okay.
My work here is done.
Brilliant.
But thank you for taking the time and for reaching out. It's very exciting. Yeah. Thank you.
Cool. Well, have a lovely rest of day, and I hope you enjoy. If you get to Photo London, let me know what you think.
I think I might just, again, I'm procrastinating. I'm like, well, maybe I'll go. Why wouldn't I? I'm gonna go. There, I said it. I'm gonna go.
It's right there.
Now I have to.
Yeah,
literally. Perfect.
Brilliant.
Awesome. Lovely to talk to you.
Yeah,
thank you
too.
For taking your time.
Oh,
yeah,
pleasure.
This is lovely.
All right.
And I hope next time I see you have an M5.
Yes, I will. I mean, Tiffany's gonna ask me at the weekend, I'm sure. So I need to make a plan.
Yeah, you need to have an answer.
I do.
Maybe you need to be like, I'm going to get it now, or I'm going to get it in 2 weeks. Or
it's in a post or something like that.
I've just clicked yes on eBay. I've just clicked buy.
Cool.
Awesome, yeah. Enjoy it when you get it.
I will, thank you. All right, have a lovely rest of the day.
You too, and have fun at Photo London.
I will, thanks a lot.
See you soon. Yeah. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Huge thanks to Amelia for being on the show there. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I think it was a good one, you know? It'd be lovely to get her back on, actually, and maybe see what she thought of Photo London. And that was a wild place to go. If you get the chance to go, you should definitely go. In fact, while you're on your computer researching going, you can also subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. So that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, Amazon Music. Leave us a review, let other people know about the program. That really helps people to find the show. You can also sign up to the Midweek newsletter. That goes out every week on a Wednesday, and there's more information about that at ianfarrell.com/sign-up. Okay. Off to do more research into film cameras. One of the listeners to the show, actually, Ruben, posted some stuff on Patreon a little while ago about some Canon cameras. I've been very slow to get back to him, so I need to do that. But I do need to indulge at some point. Right, have an amazing week, and we'll see you next time.